name's John Allred, and I am an alcoholic.
John.
Great, Bill. How long have you all been over here now? Six months? This is the third, I think it's the third, location that I've done the Step South Legacy. You know, back when you were over, I don't know where that was. And then the old one there, and now this one. So and it just keeps getting, this is big, you know. You able to pay the bill at this place? Happy birthday.
Thank you.
That's great. And congratulations to you on your desire check. You know? Is that the first one you've ever gotten? It is? This is the first time to AA? Wow. Did you go to treatment?
Yeah. Hmm?
Got your sponsor yet? Maybe we can help you after the meeting. Only kidding. You know, I'm glad to be here, and I appreciate Ed and Paul, and they've stayed in touch with me. And Paul's been a dear friend, and for 8 years, I guess. And I always look forward. I only do the steps maybe 3 or 4 times a year now, and I do them at Legacy because it just means a lot to me to do them at Legacy. And I don't do them at all in my home group. I won't do that anymore in my home group. But, because I speak there a lot. But in fact, I'll be doing there down at Preston. We got our anniversary coming up this year, and I'll be speaking down there for the anniversary. But I love Legacy, and I've got a lot of friends I met at Legacy, and it's just a great group. And I hope you never take Legacy for granted, because it can go away. You know? I've actually had great groups that I went to that are no longer around. In fact, the biggest shock, you probably remember that, some of you may remember, Dallas had a big AA convention. It's called Lone Star Roundup. For 20, 30 years. They had 4,000 people attend that thing at one time. 4,000 people. It's one of the largest conventions in the United States. And it no longer exists. It's gone. They discontinued it about 2 or 3 years ago. So you can't ever take this stuff for granted. You can't ever think that AA is always going to be there. That's why we got to stay active. That's why you got to get in the service. You got to participate in the group, clean ashtrays, do the deal. And that's the only way you can ensure that if the group doesn't stay here, at least you will. You know, that's the important thing. And I wish that I did AA better, because I don't do it all that great. You know, I wish I did, but I don't know anybody that does. You know, I really don't. Yeah, I love that meeting after the meeting when you're out having coffee and you're trying to help another alcoholic who's usually not there. And you're just trying to help him out a little bit. You know, trying to talk about him a little bit. And somebody inevitably says, right there, they always say, "Oh yeah, I know that guy. That guy, he talks the talk, but he can't walk the walk," right? Who are we kidding? None of us can walk the walk. I mean, if I could walk the walk, I wouldn't need to come to AA. I come to AA because I can't walk the walk. That's what I'm doing here. You know? I think that's what the book says, doesn't it? When we get through reading the 12 steps, what does it say? It says, what an order. Can't go through with it. Don't be discouraged. No one. So they don't exclude anybody in this deal. They don't exclude Bill Wilson. They don't exclude John Allred. They don't exclude Dr. Bob. No one among us has been able to maintain anything like perfect adherence to these principles. So nobody can do this deal. Yet those of us that can't do it, like talk about the rest of you that can't. Probably when you're not around, we talk about it, you know. And I grew up in a very non-alcoholic environment. Nobody in my family. I'm an adult child of non-alcoholics. And that's a bitch, you know. Because I got nobody to blame. Nobody in my family drinks. My dad doesn't drink. My mom doesn't drink. Sisters don't drink. Brother doesn't drink. I didn't drink growing up. I grew up in a very normal environment. Very middle-income America type stuff. You know. Nobody drank. Went to college like you're supposed to. Never drank in high school. Never drank in college. Went to college. I may have had 1 or 2 beers the whole time I was in college. It wasn't a big deal. And Got married my senior year like you're supposed to. Got out of college, went into the insurance business, Salt Lake City. Things were pretty good. I was scared to death. I don't know what I was afraid of. But I'd go in the office in the morning, secretary come up and give you these little pink messages. I'd say, well, what are these? She said, those are your phone messages. Who from? I don't know. I said, what do you think they want? I guess they want to buy some insurance, you know. I mean, phones are scary. I like to have a phone. I like to make phone calls, but I hate it when they call me. And the phone ring, because you're like, who is it? Who's calling me, you know? And when you're drinking, it's really bad. I'm going to tell you. You young alcoholics, you have no idea. You have no idea the stark terror of having a telephone with no caller ID. Boy, that'll scare the hell out of you, man. That phone ring. Who's calling? And then see, we find out answering machines so you can screen your calls, right? Screen that call. And on those things, it's old technology now, but they had, you could pick it up at one ring or at three rings or five rings, you know? I was put on that first ring. I want to know right off the bat, who is that calling? You know? Pick up one ring, and the only problem with that is that when they wouldn't leave a message, just hang up. Then you got to walk around the rest of the day thinking, who called me? That's terrible. And you come home and that light would be flashing at you, you know, a little blinking at you. The only thing worse than having that light blink at you is having it not blink at all. And then you think, nobody called me. And then when they did call you and you went over and hit that button, they'd hang up and think, son of a bitch, who called me? And wouldn't even leave their message on that, you know. Then we got that caller ID and that was real. Miracle, man, that caller. I want to tell you, all that technology, answering services and caller IDs, all that stuff was invented by alcoholics for alcoholics. Make our life a lot easier, I think. But I ran to a buddy, Stuart. Stuart drank. And Stuart drank in the bar. And so I was hanging out with Stuart, and I started hanging out in the bar. And I'd drink Coke. I'd go down to the bar with Stuart, hang out with Stuart, and drink Coke. And I love the bar. God, I love everything about the bar. And I like all kinds of, I like dark, dingy, smelly bars. I love those bars, you know. I like cowboy bars. A lot of sawdust on the floor and peanuts around, you know. I love those cowboys. I like those New York fern bars. You know, a lot of brass and glass, everything shiny. Love those New York fern bars. I like biker bars. I like to wear a suit to biker bars. You do that, no one messes with you in a biker bar. You walk in there in a suit, they think, oh, cops are here. I've never been in a bar I didn't like. I just like bars, you know. So you can get out of the bar, you can be anything you want to be in a bar. Anything you want to be, you can go be in a bar. We get out of the bar, I'm drinking Coca-Cola. Stuart's drinking whatever he drinks. We get out of the bar and we get some women over the table. And they say, what do you do? Well, I like to do a lot of stuff, you know. Sometimes I retire. I retired.
Really?
Yeah, 24-year-old retiree. So you must have made a lot of money. Sure did. That's why I drive a Toyota. Sometimes I love to be the missionary where you don't really tell them what you do. They say, what do you do? Nothing. What do you mean nothing? You got to do something. What do you do if you don't work? Yeah, I work. Well, what do you do? Look, I can't talk about it, okay? Just forget it. I can't talk about it. Okay, let's just say one thing, and then we got to drop it. I'm just going to tell you this. Let's just say I work for the government, okay? That's all I'm going to say. All right, one more thing, and then we got to quit. If I leave you real quick, you better come after me, because there's some shit going down here tonight. That's all I'm going to say. I love to be that guy. Yeah. By the way, I'm doing all that sober. I ain't started drinking yet. Because it never was good enough for me to be John Allred insurance agent. Wasn't good enough. I had to be John Allred somebody else. And it really didn't matter what that something else was as long as it was something other than what I really was. I had to be something other than what I was, doing something than what I was doing. And then I was okay. But it wasn't okay to be John Allred insurance agent. I'd be John Allred to somebody else. And finally, when my second child was born, Stuart called me up and congratulated me. He said, we're out drinking tonight. You're going to celebrate. I'm buying. You're getting drunk. Got to get drunk. And I thought, yeah, I'll do that. I can do that. So we got to this private club. You got to be a member of a private club in Utah doing drinking. We got this private club. It's called the Winery. Right across the Salt Palace. You walk down these steps. Walked in there. Lights flashing. Live band. Music going. Had a great drunk. I don't know what I drank. Some people know what they drank the first drink. I don't know. But they'd bring a drink over because people buying me drinks. They bring a drink, dark. Dark drink. Got a cherry in it. I drink it down. Next drink somebody buy me, got a light colored drink, got a twist around it. I drink it down. Some guy bought me a drink, had salt around it. Drink it down. Whatever they buy me, I'm drinking. You know, I had a great drunk. God, it was good. Danced. I want to tell you. I get a few drinks, I can dance. Dance with two lesbians. Okay, they're out there dancing together, you know. And I thought, they probably want me to join. So I got to join them, and then they left together. You know, and there I was alone. But learn something. No rejection. When you're drunk, you're just drunk. You don't reject, you're just drunk. Sat down, drank that next drink, sitting in front of me. Got up the next morning, no hangover. I really felt pretty good. I was a little tired, but it wasn't bad. You know? I called Stuart, and I said, Stuart, I had a ball. He said, you did. You flat got after it. I said, let me ask you something, Stu. You think you're going to have a drink tonight? He said, I don't know. I hadn't thought about it. I'm probably going to stop and have one. And I said, what time? He said, John, I got to work till 3 o'clock. I can't get out here any sooner than 3. And I said, well, we meet at 3:30. So I met him at 3:30, got drunk again. You know? So I drink to get drunk. That's what I do. I get drunk. I never drank socially. I never got that cocktail or that glass of wine and, you know, visited and talked at the bar and sipped on it and sat it down and had a one or two and went home. That's not the way I drink. I like to drink to get drunk. In fact, 3 weeks after that first drunk, I remember pulling up in front of the liquor store at 10 in the morning, because they open at 10. So I'm on time. Okay? I pull up the liquor store, go in the liquor store, and buy 3 little mini bottles of vodka. I don't know why I did mini bottles, but those candy bar in the airplane, you know? I buy 3 of those little mini bottles because they told me you can't smell mini bottles. Or you can't smell vodka. I buy vodka. So you can't smell vodka. So I buy those 3 little mini bottles of vodka, and I'd crack those lids open, and I'd suck those mini bottles down. That's hard. Holding that big in those little bottle. You get a hernia suckling on those puppies, you know. And then I'd be okay to go to work. And my life's changing. I mean, it's changing immediately. And I'm getting all kinds of trouble. In fact, it really ticked me off because the mothers were just getting mad about drunk drivers. And they were getting organized. We got a man president in charge of that organization now. Man president in charge of moms against drunk drivers. But they were organizing and they were putting out a lot of newspaper articles about drunk drivers. And I read this newspaper article. It said only 1 in 2,000 drunk drivers gets picked up for DWI. 1 in 2,000. I read that and I thought, that's pretty good odds. 1 in 2,000. If I get drunk every single night, I've got like 5-6 years before I need to worry about getting picked up for DWI. I've been drinking 6 months, not even 1 year, 6 months, I get my first DWI. What are the odds of that? But then I thought about that. You know, this is pretty good, though, because this means I can go like for the next 11, 12 years before I get my next DWI. You know? It was just bad. People started telling me I got a drinking problem. They started telling me I got a drinking problem. And then they start telling me I'm an alcoholic. As soon as they tell you you're an alcoholic, you got a problem. Because there's no correct response to that accusation. You can't say, when they say, you're an alcoholic, John, you can't say, am not. Because then they say, see, denial. That's the first clue. The first clue of alcoholism is denial. You got denial. There you go. You're an alcoholic. And you can't say, yeah, you're probably right. You know, because then you got to go to AA. So you can't agree or disagree. You just kind of sit there and look at them like, you're crazy, you know. Just nuts. I asked Stuart. I said, Stuart, do you think I'm an alcoholic? And he says, well, I don't know. Do you like the way alcohol tastes? I said, no. He said, well, then you're not alcoholic. I said, thank God for that piece of information. He explained to me that alcoholics like the way it tastes. That's why they drink it. He said, if you start to like the way it tastes, you'll probably be an alcoholic now. I'll keep an eye on that. He said, you're an alcoholic. I said, well, what's an alcoholic? And what is that? How do you know you're an alcoholic? What's an alcoholic? And they said, don't get offensive, John. It's a disease. Okay, great. Then let's go to the doctor. Let's get a proper diagnosis of this disease. We really can't do that. Well, how do you know you're an alcoholic? I mean, can't we go do a blood analysis? No? Well, how do you know you're an alcoholic? What's an alcoholic? Can't we go do like a CAT scan or MRI for this disease? No? Well, how do you know you're an alcoholic? Oh, yeah, here's the deal. Y'all want me to quit drinking. Okay, what happens 20 years from now? I find out I'm not alcoholic. I've been 20 years, I could have been drinking. Not going to take that kind of risk. Not going to take that kind of risk. So I finally say, well, you drink too much. As soon as they told me I drank too much, I know I'm not alcoholic. Because I never drank too much in my life. In fact, I'll tell you a secret. There's not an alcoholic in this room that ever drank too much. It's impossible to do that. Can't do it. See, I am an alcoholic, but not because I drank too much. I'm an alcoholic because I couldn't drink enough. You ever drink enough? I can see somebody from this room. You go to the bar, have a couple of cocktails. Bartender says, you give another cocktail? Oh, golly. Whew. Let's see. It's Thursday. Tomorrow's Friday. Got one more day of work. Can't be late. I think I've had enough. Never had enough. You know, I go to the bar at noon. You ever get there at noon? Start drinking at noon? It's now midnight. Been drinking in the same damn bar for 12 hours, right? I'm drunk. Hell, I know I'm talking about it.
Oh. Stuart. God, I'm drunk. He says, me too.
Can I buy another drink? Hadn't had enough. Well, if you can't drink enough, it's impossible to drink too much. Won't happen. See, normal drinkers can drink enough. And so occasionally, but not very often, they might drink too much. But if you're an alcoholic like I'm an alcoholic, you can't drink enough. Never drink too much. That's why they don't understand it. And that's what I understand them. That's why when they say, well, just quit. Get that little buzz and quit. That's not enough. You know? Just ain't enough. They'll never understand that. Because they can drink enough. And thank God they don't. So they don't have to go through what you and I would have gone through. You know? So they give you that test. They said, okay, here we got this little test. 20 questions. We're going to give you this test. See if you're alcoholic. I want you to know I can take that test and I can pass it non-alcoholic. I did it 3 times. Okay? Because I lie. Okay? In fact, I am so good at lying, I don't know I'm lying. That's how good a liar I am. I don't even know I'm lying. A lot of people call that denial. Okay? But I don't know I'm lying. You know? They say, does alcohol cause you problems at home? No. Now, I got problems at home. Alcohol's got nothing to do with it. It's philosophical. Philosophical problem. Should have talked about it before we got married, but we didn't. We just got married. My wife thought that when you get married, she wanted to be married, you know, like 7 days a week. I mean, all week long. She wanted to. I don't like to be married that way. I kind of think I got to be married Monday through Friday. Okay? Separate Friday, party all weekend, go home Monday. That's kind of why I wanted to be married. She didn't want to be married that way. She wanted to be married even on the weekend. Bad deal. Does alcohol cause you problems at work? No. Now, I got problems at work. But alcohol's got nothing to do with it. Again, it's philosophical. My boss thought that when you work for him, he wanted you to work during the day. I mean, all day long. I'm a night person. Much more effective at night than I am during the day. Bad problem. Does alcohol cause you legal problems? No? No, I got a lot of legal problems. But alcohol's got nothing to do with it. I don't know what I'd done to upset them, but the police were pissed, okay? Because when they see me, they arrest me. I mean, I can be doing nothing wrong. If a cop sees me, I go to jail. They haven't seen you ever seen in your life. Persecution, that's what it was. They, I don't know what I'd done. They had my picture and license plate on every cop car in Salt Lake City. Because when a cop drives by, I go to jail. Happened to me. I'm walking. I'm not driving. I'm walking. So there's no DWI here. I'm walking down the street. Cop drove by. I went to jail. All right. It was 3:30 in the morning. But it's a free country. You got to be able to walk down any street in this country at 3:30 in the morning if you wanted. I went to jail. All right. I didn't have a shirt on. You can walk down the streets of this country without a shirt at 3 o'clock in the morning. It's not a crime. Okay, it was a bad rainstorm. Rain, I'm walking in the 3:30 with no shirt. It's legal to do that. You can do that. You want to do that. I asked the cop why he stopped. Okay, I had a gash in my head. I had blood running down my head. Okay, that was not my fault. I'd been in a cab just prior to that. I told the cab driver, stop, I want to get out. That guy did not stop quick enough. I jumped out of that moving cab, hit my head on the ground, had ripped my shirt. That's why I took my shirt. Ripped my shirt up, had blood running down my head, a gash in there. Cop said, I thought you got rolled, you know. Stopped, found out who I was, arrested me. You know, I'm in lockup. I had a real problem. I had a timing problem. A lot of alcoholics got timing problems. And the problem with the timing problem is you don't know whether your timing's off because you're running too fast or you're running too slow. So you don't know whether to speed up or slow down. I mean, I'd get arrested and I'd think, damn, you know, what is that, like one minute, just 1 minute. If I'd been 1 minute sooner, that cop would not have been at that intersection. I'd have been through the intersection. He would not have seen me and I'd have been okay. You know? And then I'd think, well, maybe I should have been 1 minute later. If I'd have been later, just a... Then he'd have been through the intersection before I got there and would have been okay. Just so you don't know whether you're too fast or... So, I mean, I'm sitting at the bar, and I think, I wonder if it's time for me to go. Just timing's off. Your time. If I get the timing down, it's a bad, bad deal. You know? Finally figured out my real problem. Utah is at a high altitude. Okay. Y'all see those Winter Olympics a couple years ago? You know, it's in the mountains. It's in the mountains, high in the mountains. It's scientific fact. People who live at high altitudes for prolonged periods of time have thinner blood than people who live at low altitudes. That's true. I saw that on the Discovery Channel. I've been living in Utah my whole life. I got to have thin blood. You go out and you party hard on thin blood, you have a problem. What I need to do is get to sea level. Thicken up my blood and I'll be okay. And I called a buddy who lives in Seattle, that sea level, tell him about these problems I got. He said, gee, creepers, why don't you take a year off, come up here, you can stay with me and Gail and kind of put your life back together. And I said, man, I don't want to impose on you and Gail, 5 kids. He says, no imposition. So I said, I'll be there Tuesday, you know. So move to Seattle. And I really didn't really do anything in Seattle. I was just doing a little drinking, working on thickening my blood. And when you're in that kind of condition, the next logical thing you want to do, hell, you're going to want to gamble. You know, best time to gamble is when you're unemployed. That's all there is to it. So I started playing poker. It was legal up there then. I had little poker houses. And I thought, I'm just going to run down there and play in Nevada. I'm in a hot shot and a high flight. And you want to be where the real action is. So finally I thought, who am I kidding? I'm just going to move to Nevada. That's lower than sea level. You get thick blood down there, you know. So I ran down there and bounced around Las Vegas, hot in Las Vegas. Ended up in Reno, Tahoe area. Wasn't doing anything, just doing a little drinking, working on playing poker, working on thickening my blood. And a buddy of mine invited me to come back to Salt Lake for a weekend, party one weekend. Shouldn't have gone. Doing real good in Reno. I go over to Salt Lake. We went out to this place called the One More Time Club. It was a great club. Ernie owned that club. And I found her. She's sitting at the bar waiting. They're always at the bar waiting for me. And I don't know how they know I'm coming, but they're there waiting for me. Fell in love. I want to take her out on Saturday. She couldn't go out Saturday or Sunday. I had to stay till Monday. I was supposed to go home Sunday. Should have gone home Sunday. Stay till Monday to take this gal out. We got on the state Monday. That Monday was October 6th, so it was just right here, right? 24 years ago today, 1981. And we got to this bar, and it was a bad date. You know you got a bad date when you invite them to go to dinner, and then they really want to eat. Because <You know? laughs> I never eat when I drink, you know? Who puts out a fire you just started, you know? So she's eating, I'm drinking. But I'm a gentleman, so every time I order me a whiskey or her glass of wine. Well, the woman ain't keeping up. She's busy. Her wine's stacking up, you know. Now, to keep from being embarrassed, I got to drink my whiskey and drink her wine. It was just a bad day. And she finally said, take me home, and I want to take her home. She's no fun at all that night. So I took her home and dropped her off, and I went over 10:30 at night. Knocked on Price. I'm staying at Price's. He opens the door and says, I thought you had a date. I said, that damn woman. So I walked in there. I had a gallon of wine. She said she liked wine, so I bought a gallon, you know. And we went in there and we drank that wine all night. I said, now tomorrow night, Tuesday, October 7th, 1981, we're going to hit this town one more time, and then I got to get out of here. This half to drink will get me in trouble. So we got Tuesday. We started the Joker Club. Okay, Joker Club wasn't a private club. It was just a 3-2 beer bar. No hard liquor, just 3-2 beer. I'll be honest about the Joker Club. It was a topless joint. It wasn't a very fancy topless joint. Joker Club had one dancer in the whole bar. And you had to be drunk to appreciate her. I mean, it was just a sad deal. And but she's just the only dancer there, you know. So she got all eyes on her. And it was wonderful. And so we decided to go see the fashion show at the Hilton. So we went to the fashion show. And I remember the fashion, then I blacked out. I black out a lot. I black out probably every time I drink. But then, how do you know? Well, I black out a lot. And some blackouts are real scary. Some aren't too bad. Okay? There are two factors that determine how scary a blackout is. The first factor is how long are you blacked out. The longer you're blacked out, the more scary they are. Okay? And the second factor is, what are you doing when you come out of your blackout? That determines how scary that thing is, you know? And I wasn't blacked out that long, but I came out of my blackout at the worst time. Without a doubt, the worst time to come out of a blackout. It's when you're talking to the cops. Because you don't have a clue where you are in the conversation, you know? You don't have a clue. And you can't say, now what are we doing here? You can't say that, you know? So you got to kind of figure out without asking, what do they want? What have I already confessed to? What have I admitted? What have I already given them, you know? And you got to figure out all that or that. You can't ask, you know? And I finally figured out they wanted my driver's license. Well, I didn't have a driver's license. They'd taken that 3 DWIs earlier. And so I'm telling them this, like, I appreciate you stopping me. I'm going to leave my car parked here. I'm going over there. That's where I'm going. I'm going right over there. And in fact, I'll bet that's where my driver's license is, right over there. I'm going to go over there, and I'll pick up my car tomorrow. He would not let me go over there. And finally, ran my license plate, found out who it was, arrested me. And I'm in lockup. And this time, they're really upset. Because I can't even bond out. See, I knew the system. No matter what you get arrested for, you plead not guilty, right? No matter what. Not guilty. And then you go to the OR. And if you go to the OR, get on your OR, you may have to post a small bond, $50. The biggest bond back in the 70s I ever posted was $50. And go to the OR person, post a bond, get out, and they set the court date, you get you an attorney, and then you start that postponing process, right? Postpone. But you're hoping the cop dies. That's what you're doing. Mine never did. They always showed up, you know? And so when the attorney says, okay, no more postponing, tomorrow we go to court. You want to be sure on the day before court. Move. You know? I never went to court, I just moved. I never go to court, just move. And so I had all these failure to appear, warrants out. And they said, no, we're letting you out. You don't come back. So you're going to court. So I'm in lockup, can't get out. Don't like lockup, don't like nothing about lockup. One out, can't get out. Finally, a buddy of mine named Stan. Stan's not an AA, don't know anything about alcoholism or Alcoholics Anonymous, but Stan was a dear friend, had a lot of money, knew a lot of people. And so I had some influence. So he comes to me and he's down to jail and he says, I've talked to some friends and I can get you out on one condition. to release you into my custody. And the only way I'll do that is if you promise me you go to treatment. If you're sick and you need help. And I said, Stan, bless you. You are so right. I mean, I don't want to get drunk down there. I go down those bars, I get drunk, I get in all kinds of trouble. I guess I'm an alcoholic. I need help. But I can't get any in here. He says, I'll get you out of jail. So I got out of jail. Now, I had no intention of not drinking. I didn't want to quit. I'm not going to quit. I'm just getting out of jail. And I'll do or say anything to get out of jail. So I had to stay with Stan that night. I'm in his custody. Stay with Stan. Get the next morning. He throws me the yellow pages. Says, you're going where you want to go, but you got to go to treatment. So I'm looking at yellow pages. Back in 81, they had a lot of treatment centers. And I found this treatment center, called this place, and I said, I need to come in for a little treatment. The gal says, do you have any insurance? I said, no. I hadn't worked for 3.5 years. I don't have any insurance. And she says, well, it's like $12,000 back in 81. I said, I don't want to stay all year. You know? I couldn't believe it. There was one place they wanted $18,000. I saw fresher. I said, honey, listen, if I had $18,000, I wouldn't need your goddamn treatment. Couldn't believe it. Called to the one place, I said, I need to come in for a little treatment. And she's okay. And I said, you need to know something. I don't have any insurance. She's okay. And I said, well, how much is it? And she says, well, she's a salesperson. I says, give me benefits first. So she says, well, when you check in here, you get room, board, and therapy. We got two kinds of therapies. You got individual therapy and group therapy. And you get both those. And it's $9 a day. And then when you check in here, we apply for food stamps, we put the food stamps to the bill. And then we get some state aid. So if you work around here, we pay $1.50 a day. Or you could apply that to the bill, or we'll pay in cash. You can buy cigarettes with it. Cigarettes were $1.25 a pack back then out of the cigarette machine. I couldn't believe it. She couldn't believe it. I said, how? How long is your waiting list? So there's other places that wanted 12,000, 18,000. They had 30- to 60-day waiting list just to get in. I said, how long is your waiting list? She said, well, we have a bed for you tonight. I don't need to come tonight. I said, come on. She says, I think you ought to come tonight. I said, now think about this. They got bargain rates, $9 a day, room board therapy. They can't fill their beds. And their high pressure media may come in. I'm the consumer here. I got my rights. I said, honey, listen, you make my reservation for Saturday. Or just forget the whole damn deal. You know? So she did. She made it for Saturday. I didn't drink, hung out with Stan. Saturday came, I drove down there, parked in the parking lot of that place. I sat in the parking lot all day, watching them go in and out, in and out, in. I wanted to see what kind of person goes to a $9 a day jitter joint, you know? And those guys going in there, you know what? They were alcoholics. You could tell looking at that guy. I wonder he's going there. Look at that guy. He's an alcoholic if I've ever seen one. They didn't look like an alcoholic. Y'all don't look like alcoholics. Those guys going in that joint looked like they needed to go in that joint, you know? And I wasn't an alcoholic, but it fit my budget, so I checked in. And nothing happened. Saturday, I just got a whole bunch of papers. Got my room. Nice place, clean place, new place. Sunday came, had my first exposure to Alcoholics Anonymous. Two guys from outside come in, they chaired this meeting. We sat around lunch tables, about lunch room, 36 of us, all men, sat around these lunch tables. And these two guys talked for a long time, didn't listen to a thing they said, because I'm busy watching everybody else. I'm trying to figure out how you do AA. Because I'm a real chameleon, you know. I'm going to go somewhere, I'm going to watch how they act, how they behave, what kind of language they use, and then I'm going to fit, I'm going to blend when we do that. And so I'm watching everybody else. And nobody wanted to be there. They're just smoking cigarettes, drinking coffee, waiting to get through that meeting. And these two guys talked. They got through talking. They started down the rows. It was an open discussion meeting. These guys were going to share. First guy introduced himself, said, my name's Joe B. I'm an alcoholic. I'll pass. Same guy said, my name's Jim S. I'm an alcoholic. I'll pass. Hell, I cut on real quick. What they do in AA, they give their first name, last initial, admit to the group they're alcoholic, and then pass. There's something magical about admitting to the group. If you admit you're an alcoholic to this group, it's just magic, you know. It's just like take that burden on alcoholism off your shoulders. So that must be the deal, because they had it written on the wall, admitted you were powerless over alcohol. So it got to me. I did it right. So my name is John A. I'm an alcoholic. Nothing happened. Not a damn thing happened. Oh, well, I guess I'm not an alcoholic. You know? And if I do have a little bit of alcoholism in me, Alcoholics Anonymous must be for really simple-minded people, if that's the program, you know. Now, as distorted perception that is of AA, that was my perception of Alcoholics Anonymous. It ain't for me. Besides, I'm not an alcoholic anyway. Somebody's calling. The next day, I got me my counselor, Dell. Lovely lady on Monday. Met Dell. She came in. Got to have an hour personal consultation with my counselor. She wanted me to stay 2 months. 2 months. I said, Dell. I've been here all weekend, okay? I've been talking to these guys. They told me they're alcoholics. I have no reason to doubt that they are. They look like they probably are alcoholics. You know? They told me how that first month you're going to break me down. You're going to get me to be open and honest. I said, I've always been open and honest. I'll save you a month right there. Never a problem. I just can't stay 2 months. I'm busy. She said, you're busy? I said, yes, I'm busy. She looks through her papers. She looks up. She says, now, where were you working? Well, I'm not working, but I'm busy. Isn't that true about alcoholics? Alcoholics are the most busy, unemployed people you ever want to meet in your life. Here we are. Come to the meeting tomorrow, right? Come to the meeting tomorrow. The other guy's unemployed. He's got nothing to do but get to the meeting, and he's late. And you say, where have you been? Hell, I've been busy. They don't know what we do, but we're busy doing it. So I said, I'll give you 2 weeks. Because, see, I'm not going to quit drinking. I don't tell anybody this. But I just figured, I'm just doing treatment time. I figure treatment time is better than jail time. You know. So I said, I'm going to give you 2 weeks. So you give me whatever material you're going to study during that two-month period. I'll read ahead. You give me some pop quizzes if you want. Because 2 weeks, I'm out of here. So she doesn't all that bill. So I said, what better hurry with you? She said, damn right, you better hurry with me. And I'm like, Tuesday, I go to group therapy. Love group. Group is a lot of fun. Wednesday's alcoholic education seminar. I'm showing a movie. Well, I'm not impressed with movies about drug addiction and alcoholism. They're boring to me. Even today, they're boring. So I'm sitting there, all my ego, all my pride, all my contempt, prepared not to like this movie. And the name of the movie they're showing was I'll Quit Tomorrow. So I'm sitting there watching this movie. Tore me up. I related to everything in that movie. I mean, it's like they'd made a movie of my life and they were showing it to the group. I did everything that guy did. I talked the way he talked. I acted the way he acted. I dressed the way he dressed. I drank. I drank the way he drank. I did everything that guy did. I related to everything in that movie. It's just like they made a movie in my life and they're showing it to the group. And I knew the gig was up. That was my moment of clarity when I knew the gig was up. What happened to me that night is I quit looking for that definition. What's an alcoholic? How do you know you're an alcoholic? I later found out in AA, see, we don't have a definition of an alcoholic. I couldn't define an alcoholic for you tonight. What we have in AA is a description. So you can't argue with the description. You can argue with the definition. That's why, that's why Webster's got 10 definitions for every word, right? But you can't argue with the description. The most powerful tool God's given Alcoholics Anonymous is our description of the alcoholic. Because it's that description, as the alcoholic relates to it, that seems to have the power to literally strip everything that separates the alcoholic from himself. And I could see me that night like I'd never seen me. I could see me that night like my mom saw me. I could see me that night like my ex-wife saw me. As I related that guy in the movie. The difference was I could see me. And I knew the gig was up. The most powerful tool we have. Think how important that description is. Two-thirds of our book, two-thirds of the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous is what? Descriptions of alcoholics in the stories. I mean, why'd they put all those stories in there? Just to make a big book? No, is that important? You know? And I stayed there 6 weeks. Couldn't stay 2 months. Too busy. You know? But I just stayed 6 weeks. I got out of there the first December, and they said, now you need aftercare. You need aftercare. But you're living in Reno, worse like that's 800 miles. You can't come back here 3 times a week for aftercare. So we're going to prescribe you go to AA for your aftercare. You go to AA at least 3 times a week. And they gave me intergroup's phone number. So I got back to Reno. I knew three things when I got back to Reno. Or two things. I know I'm an alcoholic. I don't want to drink. I know that. The second thing was I knew AA's got nothing to offer. Okay? I mean, because you go there, you give your first name, last initial, admit to the group you're alcoholic, and then pass. You know? Why do we got to do that every time? You know? That's just silly. You know? But I don't want to drink because I'm an alcoholic. I know that. So the first time back in town, I call intergroup in Reno, and a guy answered the phone. I said, my name's John A. I'm an alcoholic. I'm Bruce, I'm an alcoholic. John, what can I do for you? And I said, well, listen, I just got out of treatment over in Salt Lake City. And I'm living here in Reno, and I wanted to call and report in. He said, well, I thought they had me on computer, you know. And if you don't report in, they'll put out a failure to appear on you, and you're in trouble. He said, well, I'm glad you're here. He said, you want to go to a meeting tonight? I said, yeah, I'll go to a meeting. You probably want to meet me. He said, well, I'm not going, but there's a men's stag. The men's stag at the Hotel Riverside Casino. Starts at 8:30. Third floor share room. I said, I know where that is. I'll be there. Be there early so we can meet. He said, well, I won't be there. And I said, well, call them and tell them John A's coming to their meeting. He said, don't worry. They'll be there. So I show up. 20 after 8. First resentment, Alcoholics Anonymous. I called. Made reservation. Told him I'm coming. The guy did not call and tell him I'm coming. Nobody did. There to meet me. You know, just some guy sitting around drinking coffee waiting for me. Nobody come and say, oh, you must be John A. Here's your chair. You know, no. Just some guys drinking coffee waiting for the meeting. I got my coffee, sat down. This old guy got red name. His name was Red. Got the chair of the meeting. Red looked like alcoholic. He talked for a long time. Didn't listen to a thing Red said because I'm busy watching what these guys do. They did AA just in Reno just the way they did in treatment. Nobody paid a bit of attention. They drank coffee, smoked cigarettes. They got through talking, started down the row, discussion meeting. These guys did not pass. They were talking. Now, I have no idea what they were talking about. They were sharing stuff. Nothing we talked about in treatment. They couldn't even introduce themselves right. Some of them, when they introduced themselves, did not give their last initial. They said, my name's John, I'm alcoholic. You're supposed to give your last initial. That's what you're supposed to do. Some of them gave their last name. They said, my name's John Allred, I'm alcoholic. What does he think anonymous means, man? I mean, I know his first and last name. I could look him up in the phone book if one. So I thought, you know what? If he's not going to respect his anonymity, I will. I won't look at the guy. Don't look at the guy. I don't know who you are. Don't know nothing about you. If I see you on the street, I'm not even going to say hi. This is an anonymous program. You know? They talked about stuff. I don't know what they talked about. Nothing we talked about in treatment. I mean, I sat half through that meeting. Nobody mentioned we got an XY chromosome deficiency. It became real clear to me. These guys have not been to treatment. So it got to me. I thought I'd help. And I did it right to you. I said, my name is John A. I'm an alcoholic. And I qualified. I said, listen, guys, I just got a treatment over in Salt Lake City. And I want you all to know I have the latest, most up-to-date medical and psychological information on the disease of alcoholism. The second resentment, Red cut me off, said, thank you, John. We're on the next guy. Oh, that son of a bitch is jealous. I know stuff he doesn't know. What's the problem with that guy? After me, some guys come up and shook my hand and said, hope you come back. I said, I'll be back. They need me down there. Now, Chuck Chamberlain used to always say, every man is my teacher. Some people teach me what to do, some people teach me what not to do. Okay, please keep in mind, most of what I'm going to share for the next month is what not to do, okay? Because I've done this deal all wrong. I don't know where I was when somebody said 90 meetings in 90 days. It's not the way I do. I did one meeting a week. Every Thursday, I'm down on my men's stack. Now, they will not let me share down there. But I keep going back. I figure, I'm a hell of a lot younger than Red. He's going to die, then I get to share. You know? I don't care what happens when you go to one meeting a week. You haven't tried that program? Let me see what happens to you. One of the things they told me in treatment, which is true. They told me in treatment, they said, John, don't drink. Okay? Just don't drink. If you don't drink, you're going to feel better. And that's true. But nobody explained to me what that meant. If you don't drink, you will feel better. You're going to feel everything better. You're going to feel all the pain, all the anger, all those images. You're going to feel all that shit a whole lot better. You know, so I drink when I feel better like that. I'm walking around, you know, feeling better, going nuts. You know, that's why I drink. So I'm down there on Christmas Eve. My Thursday night was Christmas Eve. I'm in a stag meeting. And they said, now tomorrow's Christmas Day, and you got nowhere to go for Christmas dinner, you can go to the Drivers Club, Skid Row Clubhouse, on Wells Street. Still there. So I had nowhere to go Christmas Day, so I went over to the Drivers Club, ate. It was good. After the meeting, after I ate, I'm sitting there, not bothering anybody, just smoking a cigarette, drinking a cup of coffee. Old timer spotted me. You know you're in trouble, because her eyes kind of glazed over. They go, newcomer, you know? They start to salivate when they see a newcomer like that. And he got up, he started walking over toward me, and I saw him coming out. Oh, God, look at this guy. He's not my kind of guy. He's an old guy. Fat old guy. He's not cool at all. I like cool guys. This guy's not cool. He's a fat old guy. Big, funny hair, big nose. Not my kind of guy. He comes over and introduces himself. His name is Don. He informs me he's the coordinator of intergroup. I have no idea what that is, but I thought, you know what? I'm glad they found something for you to do. So I got talking to Don, and it became clear to me after talking to Don for just a few minutes. Don has not been to treatment. So I start telling stuff that will not let me talk about my home group. Don gets a funny look on his face, and he says, John, would you like to go to a meeting with me tonight? And I said, well, hell, Don, it's Friday. I go Thursdays over to the men's stag group. He says, we got a meeting every night in Reno. And that week, that month I've been going to AA, I'd heard something about spirituality. This is a spiritual program, right? So I thought, okay, it's a spiritual program. It's Christmas. I can go twice this week. Won't hurt. You know? So Don comes, gets me. We've got to stay at hospital. We've got to meet at state hospital at 7 o'clock at night out there. We got to stay at hospital Friday night. Walk in. I love it because they give you a raffle ticket. Why can they mean they give you a raffle ticket in that meeting? And it didn't mean they raffle off the Big Booker's bill season. So I get my raffle ticket, walk in the meeting. There were women in that meeting. First meeting I've been to with women in the meeting. I mean, I've been in a men's drive joint, men's stag meeting. I didn't know that other men. You know, I thought it was a man's deal. Got women in the meeting. Immediately adopt that as my home group. I'm coming back here Friday, baby. Why am I going to the men's stag on Thursday? So that guy, I don't know what they talk about because I'm busy praying. Okay? Because although I have a great mind and I read real fast, okay, I had forgot to get a big book. This is it, man. I'm winning the book. I'm probably the only guy here without a big book. I'm winning this book. This is going to be God's gift to me on Christmas. It's Christmas Day. Nobody gave me any Christmas gifts. God is going to give me that book. I'm winning that book. I prayed hard. I prayed all hours for that meeting. By the time that meeting's over, God can give that book to no one but me. Nobody's been praying like I've been praying. I want the book. The book's mine. So then the meeting, they had the raffle off the big book. My third reason I'm in the AA. Some little gray haired lady, 25 years sober, wins my book. I said, what's she doing? Win my book. You know, 25 years. Can't even see the read woman so old. Wins my book. So I'm storming out of there. Before I get out of there, that little lady comes up and gives me that book. That's where I got my big book. And I took that book home that night. And I used to say, years ago, I took that book home that night and I read it from cover to cover. So if you ever heard me say that, or if you ever get hold of a really old tape, or I said that on the tape, please believe me that when I said that, hell, I believed it. You know? Then I got involved in a big book. So you remember the chapters I got in that book. We got a chapter in the book, chapter to the wives, you know? Well, I wasn't a wife, didn't have a wife, didn't want a wife. Didn't read that chapter, okay? We got a chapter in the book, chapter to the employer. Hell, I'm not an employee. Didn't read that chapter. Okay? Chapter in the book, we agnostics. Well, I wasn't agnostic, I knew God real well. Didn't read that chapter. Well, I want to tell you, if you just read chapter 3 and chapter 5, you can read that tonight. It won't take you that long to do it. Well, the next day, Don calls me on the phone, takes me to another meeting. Every day, this guy's calling me, taking me to a meeting. I don't really want to go. But he doesn't ask. He just says, I'll pick up in 20 minutes. Quick. I think, how does he know I want to go? I don't want to. I'm not going to go to his damn meeting. And I think, wait a minute. If I don't go, what's he going to say about me behind my back? I got to go. Got to go to my friend's. So I got to take it. So at that time I hadn't worked any steps, didn't have a sponsor, nothing. The only change in my life is I'm going to a meeting every single day. And an interesting thing happened, a fascinating thing happened. I not only feel better, but I feel good. And I hadn't felt those two things at the same time in years. And all of a sudden, sobriety started putting on flesh and bones. I started meeting other guys. I started hanging out. At intergroup during the day, drinking coffee, going to my meetings at night with Don. And I started to get excited about AA. And it was embarrassing. Really, well, I mean, Don would come by and get me, and we'd be driving out to the meeting. And I'd feel like a little kid sitting in the front seat driving. And I'd say, "Don, you think you can go get ice cream tonight?" "We'll see, you know." But I started hanging out there. I started getting excited about going to AA. I'm pumped up. I'm that intergroup. A week later, it's Thursday. One of my men stagged me Thursday night. It's New Year's Eve. A week later, I'm at intergroup. Phone rings, intergroup on New Year's Eve. I grab the phone. Young kid named Glenn. Glenn's 17 years old. Wants not to stay sober New Year's Eve. I said, "Why?" I mean, "God damn, Glenn, you're 17. And it's New Year's Eve. Nobody gets sober New Year's Eve. Call tomorrow. We're going to be here tomorrow, you know." Don grabs that phone away from me. So when he passed the rule of central office, you must have 6 months or more sobriety to answer that phone. What a big sign. Must have 6 months to answer a phone, you know. My fourth resentment in AA. Don talked to him. I don't know what he said. Gave me his phone number. Not gave me my phone number. The next day, Don calls me and said, "Hey, Glenn stays sober. Wants to go to a meeting." I'm like, "Great." So Don comes and gets me. We go get Glenn. My first 12-step call. Great. We're going out to State Hospital. Right at my big buddy. We're driving out there. And damn it, Don's just driving the car. He's not preparing Glenn for AA. Hell, I got to do it all. Just got to do it all, you know? So I started telling Glenn all about AA. I said, "Glenn, you're going to love this, man. You get women your very first meeting. Very first. I didn't know they were there for months. You get women right out of the chute. And I've been to a couple other groups. This group's got the best looking women. I want to come back here every Friday night. This is a great group to come to. I'll come with you next Friday and we'll come here. And then, Glenn, we're going to get a raffle ticket. And at the end of the meeting, they can raffle off a big book or a bill season. Hang on to that raffle ticket, because if God loves you, you win the book." Don, I say, where Don just drives to the meeting. We get to the meeting, get a raffle ticket. I don't know what they talked about, because I'm busy praying for Glenn. I thought, "Come on, God, let Glenn win the book. If Glenn can win the book, that'll be proof, you know, that God's working in his life. And not that, and he'll stay sober forever, right? Not that it matters, but, you know, I would have 100% 12-step call success rate. I'll be able to write articles in the Grapevine how to have 100% 12-step call success rate. It'll just be wonderful. So I prayed all meeting for Glenn to win that book. Then the meeting went to have the raffle off the big book. I won the book. Don turned to me and said, "See how that works?" I said, "Yeah, I signed it and gave it to Glenn." That's where Glenn got his book. Okay? And Glenn's sober today because I gave him the book. That little experience early in my sobriety taught me a lot. Because it taught me how God works. See, whenever God works, it's a win-win situation. It's a win-win deal. There are always two winners when God works. It's a win-win situation when God works. God works through people. See, by working through people, it becomes a win-win deal. There are always two winners when God works. God works through people. See, I could have won the big book the first night. There'd have been one winner, me. But that little lady won by being able to share with me, and I won by being able to receive from her. Two winners. We played her two winners. I won by being able to share with Glenn. Glenn won by being able to receive from me. God works through people. See, by working through people, he gets twice the result for the same effort. Very efficient God. Very efficient God. God works through people. Also taught me how Alcoholics Anonymous works. Alcoholics Anonymous is one drunk sharing with another. And when that happens, guys, that's the magic to our deal. And there are two winners. The drunk and the sharing, the drunk and the receiving. See, I've told that story in 24 years. 1,000 times, maybe more. Every time I tell that story, I remember that moment of clarity when I knew the gig was up. I remember like it happened yesterday. I'm convinced that all of us here that are sober and Alcoholics Anonymous tonight have had that moment. And you knew the gig was up. I'm equally convinced that those that come to AA for a while and leave and are out there drinking and dying tonight, they had that moment of clarity when they knew it was up. What's the difference between those of us that are here sober and those that have left and are out there drinking? We both had that moment of clarity. I think what happens in Alcoholics Anonymous is really pretty simple. What we do in here is we keep that moment alive. We keep it alive. See, as I've shared my moment with you and you related to it, what have you thought about? And when I'm on that side of the podium, one of the y'all is up here, and you're sharing your moment of what it was like and what happened, and you're keeping your moment alive. By the way, isn't this the perfect program for people whose root problem is they're selfish, self-centered? Because when you're up here and you're remembering your moment and you're keeping your moment alive, I'm so self-centered, what am I thinking about? My moment, screw you, Bill. You know? We keep it alive. And nowhere can you keep that moment alive but when one alcoholic shares with another. That's no time, it's a win-win deal. You can't keep that moment alive by sharing with your doctor. Doctor doesn't need to hear it. My life depends on hearing about your moment so that my moment stays alive. My life depends on that. You can't keep it alive by sharing with your therapist. Therapist doesn't need to hear it. I need to hear about your moment so that my moment stays alive. We keep that moment alive. And what happens when you lose your moment? You take drunk. You know? And what have we shared so far tonight? We've only shared two things. How powerless I was over alcohol and how unmanageable my life was. We keep that moment alive. Because it's that moment that is God's gift. And that moment usually, not all the time, it usually takes place before you get to AA. We assume you've had that when you got here. And the proof of that statement is your last drink. I'm going to bet a whole lot of money. When you had your last drink, and you sat it down, you had no idea that was your last drink. I didn't. Hell, if I would have, I'd have done it different. You know? What happened? What happened? Why was that your last drink? Divine intervention. It always happens to the alcoholic. We always have that break. And we'll talk about the rest of the program next week. Thank you.